Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm Robbie, this is my co-host Kyle, and as always, we are excited to talk about the newest updates from Marvel Studios. Last week, we talked about a brand new slew of shows coming out on Disney Plus, and I feel like we barely scratched the surface on that because there's just so much content. And that wasn't even touching what we're going to be taking up this week, which is all of the new films that are coming out, which of course is how all of us got into this world in the first place. And so I'm extra excited to talk about that today. But Kyle, I believe we had some leftovers first before we delve into that.
We do. I'm not sure which one I'm actually more excited for. That might be an interesting poll. The shows or the movies?
Great question.
Yes, leftovers. Okay, couple things. Leftovers, by the way, is one of my favorite things to do because it means that I had more to say or somebody informed me of something, which I love. First of all, everybody on social media told us that TVA stands for Time Variance Authority. So basically kind of the time police like we joked about.
Right. But and I've got to turn in my Marvel Comics expert card, I guess.
That's what I was going to say. I kind of was relying on you to know that. So
I know.
It's nice that everyone filled this in, but apparently it was common knowledge amongst other people.
And I feel like now that it's said, maybe I had read that somewhere and let it slip out of my brain because it does ring a bell. But I'm honestly not mad that I didn't know it because I love hearing stuff like that from our listeners. It reminds me they're paying attention.
This actually brought to light something that I had never really thought about before. On this podcast, we've talked a lot about how you know comics and you have some comic background. And so like when you went into some of these movies, you knew some things about them. You knew the characters, you knew some little side stories or at least maybe what they're basing it on.
Right.
And then I always talk about how I never know anything about it. And that's actually one of my favorite things. It's like
right.
I don't often know anything from the trailer. I haven't done any research on the director or the comics or what they did but in the past or, you know, I don't know anything. And then I feel like I can just take in the movie and then give my opinion. And I've loved that. But I realized this is going to be the first time that we comment on something that neither of us have seen or any of our audience has seen. And so there's going to be this balance I'm going to have to find of like, I want to be speculative and be on the front edge of trying to guess what's going to happen and fill in our audience on what we know from the comics and all that. But I hope it doesn't end up ruining that first experience for me. Is that weird?
No, I totally get it. I mean, and I have had the same concern with certain things where folks will tell me to watch a trailer or to read up on something, and I kind of will intentionally not. I know you're the same way. On things I don't want to be spoiled on, even just by what the trailer is, because often I feel like trailers...
Right. We talked about that last week a little bit.
Right. And so...
But I think for some people, it's really, really fun to try to guess, and then for others,
right.
like me or my wife, we try to avoid and not think about it so that we don't
totally.
Accidentally
so,
guess it right.
yes. Okay, I remember actually... whenever, so I was a big Harry Potter book fan. Not that I am against the movies. I'm a little bit kind of ambivalent about the movies, but I really loved the books when they were coming out. It kind of aged perfectly with me. And I remember between the sixth and seventh Harry Potter books, spoiler alert, by the way, I feel like if you don't know how Harry Potter ends at this point, yeah. I'm sorry.
There's like a time limit on spoiler alert. At some right. point, you're allowed just to say it.
But like, I remember it was like the night that the seventh book came out, right? So no one had really read it yet. It was coming out at midnight or whatever it was. And a buddy of mine was like, you know what I think? I think that Harry is going to wind up being like himself one of the Horcruxes. And I heard him say Yikes. That, and I immediately knew he was right. And I hated him for it.
See, that's what I'm saying, because it's kind of our job on this podcast to try to guess some of those things, isn't it? But right. if I get it right, yeah. I'll be bummed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I will say this. After I thought those things, I also came back to the conclusion that for the most part, I've trusted Kevin. Like, if they show me something in the trailer, I think they're okay with us knowing that thing. And for right. the most part, those trailers or those like thoughts or guesses have not spoiled things for me in the past when we have done them. And I used to do that on right. other shows like The Office or Lost or whatever. I would try to do that. So I am used to that from like 10 years ago. But
right.
if I get it right, it probably will be a letdown. But that's been the beauty of some of these stories, is that it's been really hard to get these right, and that they take the comic stories and twist them in a subtle way.
Right. Well, and I would say that in recent years, Marvel's gotten really good at that. Even with movies like Captain Marvel that are somewhat controversial, even on this podcast, I think one of the strengths of that movie is the twist. You know,
absolutely.
Like, there are kind of a couple twists in that movie that I think...
The Skrulls is like the most obvious Marvel's gotten better at this thing that I can think
sure.
of.
Sure. I think Far From Home is another example. Obviously, oh! Infinity War and Endgame are both examples. You know, like, I just think
so good how mysterious. Yeah, the drones and all that is such a good twist. Not from an alternate dimension.
Right, yes. And even though, and this is something we'll talk about more on our Far From Home episode, which is coming up. We didn't forget about it.
Yes.
But even the end credit scene there, which we can talk about whether we like that, but that is again kind of another pretty big twist. Whereas, like, I just think it, so, you know, if you look back at like the Avengers, I think that it, you know, you kind of know that they're going to save the day there at the end. Like, you can just kind of get the sense that that's where the movie's heading. It's sort of a classic superhero movie. And Age of Ultron has its own kind of twist with the Hawkeye thing, but it's largely pretty similar. But I really do think Phase 3 onward, Marvel's known now, and we've talked about this before, they know now that people are reading into everything, like every possible little Easter egg. There are people whose paychecks are paid by looking, you know, at the stills of every single trailer and trying to pick out what's coming. And so I think that that's a lot of pressure, obviously, on folks like Kevin Feige, but I think he's handled it really well. And, you know, we were talking earlier about how, you know, you look at the Civil War comic, and that really gives you very little insight into how the Civil War movie played out.
Right.
And like Infinity War, you know, I was just recently rereading the Jonathan Hickman Avengers series that a lot of Infinity War was kind of based on, in addition to being based on the Infinity Gauntlet story from the 70s. And you can read both of those and still not at all see coming how the Infinity War film actually is going to play out. So I'm not going to belabor this, but, you know, like it gives me faith that Marvel can even show things like, you know, TVA that folks are familiar with, or other things in WandaVision that spark things that I'm familiar with from series I've read without actually really showing any of its cards.
I think that's all of what you just said is what I ultimately landed on. You just said it in a lot longer-winded, more eloquent way than me. But yes,
at least longer-winded.
At least longer-winded. That's what I settled on. Okay, leftover number two. Of course, it wouldn't be a Friends from Work podcast without Disney and Marvel releasing something the second we release our episode. Okay? Every time we put something out, it immediately becomes outdated. It's like one second later.
I know, need to start putting out episodes just to spur new content, because I think there's some kind of mystical connection there.
Yeah, like whenever we do it, they decide to do it. So there's one other Disney Plus show coming out called Legends, and here's what it says on their post. Legends is a new series that revisits some of the most iconic moments from the MCU, one character at a time, kicking off with Wanda Maximoff and Vision. The first two episodes start streaming January 8th, only on Disney Plus, which is kind of cool. I don't think it's going to be necessarily new content, but it'll be kind of like what we did with Cap and Tony, where before we dive in with WandaVision, let's rewind and find out everything about them that we've seen already.
Right.
Like, here's where you are so far. And that sounds fun.
I love that.
I'll definitely be watching it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should, you know, consider suing Marvel for stealing our approach here.
And I was going to say, but now that's perfect for us to cover WandaVision. Remember, there was 1 week before that we were going to do WandaVision hype. How perfect is it now
that we
can watch this first and then release the episode on it? So that'll be fun.
And I really do love that Marvel's doing that, because I feel like that's the stuff that really makes the difference between whether people connect to this content or not. I really think that I think WandaVision looks like it's going to be really interesting regardless, but I think if you kind of approach it in a vacuum and forget where those characters are coming from, it's going to be a lot less fulfilling. So I think that that's a cool idea, and I think it shows that they kind of respect the sort of things that we respect, and it shows again why I think Marvel is so unique in the way they handle this stuff.
Right. Okay, one last leftover, and then we can move on. I have a PlayStation story follow-up. It's not nearly as epic as last week. It's not nearly as epic as last week. But the guy blocked me on Twitter. So we're done, officially. Like, it's over. So I got blocked on Twitter on Saturday morning. So I'm now out of a PlayStation. My wife and I go to Home Depot and pick up some chairs. And I drive back to my house at 2:47. I park the car and I put the chairs inside and I check my phone and I get this alert that GameStop is going to be having PlayStation 5s, not in stock, but on site. You can order one at 3 p.m. Central with their help. So it's 2:47. I just saw this that I was posted 1 minute ago. I immediately said, Annika, I have to go. I got my car. I drove to GameStop 11 minutes away. I got there at 3 o'clock on the dot. I was the 7th person in line outside. The guy comes outside asking people what do they want to get. And I said, I want the PS5 disc version. And I was the last one. He said, okay, you're my last one. And this is, again, just to order it. I still, Robbie, waited outside GameStop for an hour to get in for my one shot. And this is 7 only people in front of me. I get inside, and all they're doing is GameStop can order them through their like company website. So they're just refreshing like we do because it's crashed on their end. So the website's crashed.
Gosh.
And I kid you not, without exaggerating, I sat at the counter with the guy for an hour with him refreshing. For an hour, it said not available. And I just stood there because he's like, we're going to keep trying to see if they get you any. What I figured out was they didn't have 7 guaranteed. They could sell a maximum of 7. So I'm like sitting there going, I'm still not going to get this. Are you kidding me? Even though I had this piece of paper. And then at like an hour into that, he got a corporate email. And I thought, okay, this corporate email says they're sold out. I'm screwed. And he was like, And he opened it up and it says, we still have them in stock. Keep refreshing. And then right after that, he refreshed and we got it filled out and I got it. So that's the end of my story. I have not received it yet, but I have officially, finally, after a month, ordered my PlayStation 5. So I'm finally going to join your ranks. Can you believe it?
Man, it's so crazy because don't you just feel like...
Saga's over. It's over, I'm free.
I feel free from something. I think that's why, I finally, it was dominating way too much of my life, search for this console. And I'm just
equal parts excited to play video games and just equal parts excited to never think about it again.
Gosh, I know. And to just, it's like being in this constant, terrible scavenger hunt.
But congrats. Thank you. To add one other thing, when I finally get my console, for anyone who cares, I'm going to be streaming on Twitch some Miles Morales action. So if you want to see what the Miles Morales video game looks like, you can follow me. Hit me up on social media. It's twitch.com/sconesycider, which is a play on my name and The Office. Okay, so don't judge. But in general, if you ever want to watch me play video games, which sounds stupid to you, that's fine. But if it's not stupid to you, hit me up there.
Well, and I think that that's something, even if it's late, given how late a lot of folks are getting their PS5s, I think we'll probably still do an episode covering Miles Morales as well.
We do need to talk about that. Yeah, for sure. For anyone who actually played the first Spider-Man, they probably want to know a review of the follow-up.
Okay, so I'm just curious, what was your final communication with this guy prior to the Twitter blocking? Like, how did the relationship finally end?
Once I asked him to send a selfie with him and the PlayStation, and he responded with no thanks. I said, why not? He never responded, and I said, exactly. And I said, dude, I hope you find the money you're hard up for. And he never responded to that. And that was it. And then he blocked me.
And then he blocked you, man.
Our relationship is officially over.
You had it coming.
He had it coming too. Golly, that guy. Unbelievable. So,
man,
PlayStation Saga over, and I'm happy to be on their side of it.
First question you can ask God when you get to heaven.
That will not be my first question. social media, you guys, follow us. This is where we get a lot of our interaction with you, at the FFW Podcast. And that's where I can share that Twitch link. And just amongst other things, like a lot of you reached out already about the TVA and stuff like that and how you're excited. We love it. We love that dialogue. So at the FFW Podcast, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. And
yes,
subscribe to our podcast and tell people about it. We want this community to grow.
I just want to say we have a great Instagram community, but I feel like as these new shows are coming out, Twitter is particularly conducive to conversations and to updates. So to the extent that you are on Twitter, that's where we're probably going to be having a lot of these conversations. We'll obviously still be posting all sorts of things on Instagram, but we would love to see some of you guys over there as well.
We like to actually keep our Instagram just full of actual cool pictures, whereas Twitter is more of the conversation. So love that.
Exactly.
And then poor Facebook. We're on Facebook too. We share stuff there, but I didn't mention it. Okay, Robbie, as we dive into these films, and this is going to be an epic episode because there's a lot of films, we don't have to maybe go crazy into all of it, but let's talk first about just the big picture, because whereas last week's episode is kind of like the future of where the streaming is going with Disney Plus and all that, movies, on the other hand, it's just more up in the air. I never thought I'd say that with how big of blockbusters Marvel has had. You know, think about 2 years ago when we're at Infinity War and Endgame telling that person that movies might be in doubt in general in movie theaters. That's just insane. It just made billions of dollars and now we're having this conversation. But I can't help but wonder, will the movie theater experience ever be the same? There was some drama on the Tenet front with Warner Brothers and Warner Brothers announcing that a lot of their upcoming movies now are going to streaming, like Wonder Woman and a few others. Disney so far has said they still plan to stick with like Black Widow being in theaters. And I kind of hope that, man, honestly, I kind of hope I still have the theater experience for us. I mean, we're movie critics, we're movie guys. So like, I think we'd miss that. But it's hard to talk about all the upcoming MCU blockbuster film budget films without mentioning that, in general, these timelines are in question.
Yeah, this is something that's legitimately bothered me over these past few months. And, you know, people are aware of our feelings towards Christopher Nolan. I hate that he kind of got some flack for trying to push Tenet forward. I don't think that that was him being tone deaf. I think that that was him trying to save an industry that he saw was in real trouble. And I think that these latest announcements show that he was correct in his assessment. I really, really hope that theaters are able to recover from this. Like, I love the movie theater experience so much. I know you and Annika are the same way. Candace is obviously the same way. Like, we're huge movie theater goers. And I just can't imagine watching Black Widow in our living room for the first time.
But that's like how it's trending.
I mean,
they can control the streaming side of it. So that makes sense to me, but yeah, it's Black Widow's like one of the last holdouts. That makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I think I'll still enjoy watching it in my house too, but it would just be kind of a sad thing. On the Christopher Nolan note, did you see the Tom Cruise story? The audio clip?
I didn't.
Did you hear that? Oh, wow.
So, okay, I saw some people talking about this, but I didn't actually go and see what it was people were talking about.
Tom Cruise was trending the other day on Twitter, and I clicked on it, and there's like a 2 minute and 12 second or something like that audio recording, a secret audio recording of him just absolutely losing his mind on some crew members for, I guess, apparently breaking COVID protocols. You can't see anything. You can just hear it, and he's losing, like Christian Bale-esque, losing his mind. You remember the Christian Bale rant, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, Google Christian Bale yelling on set and then Google Tom Cruise. But I only say that because in his rant, he multiple times says, like, I don't want this movie, which is Mission Impossible 7, to, like, collapse. Like, he doesn't want the industry to go away. So you have to take this seriously because if this movie gets delayed, it might not go into theaters, et cetera. Like, I think all these people are just aware. By the way, it's funny to listen to and it's crazy to listen to, but also I think they're all just aware of like the pressure on the movie industry.
Right.
It's just a weird time for that stuff.
Yeah. And you know, like I really, maybe I'm being overly sappy here. Like the thing is, I don't think whether you're talking about Chris Nolan or Tom Cruise, that either of these guys are particularly hard up for cash.
Something tells me not.
Right. So I don't think that this is something where they're just trying to make sure that they can pad their pockets. Like, I think that both of those people, however you feel about Tom Cruise, I think that it's established that he is a guy that really loves the spectacle of theatrical movies.
I think both of those guys, like, they're like known as guys who purposely make movies for theaters. Like, he'll say, like, Tenet needs to be seen in IMAX. Same with Tom Cruise. Like, he's not doing all those stunts just so you can watch it on your iPhone, you know, in his mind.
Right. Right. No, exactly. And I think it's going to be a really interesting, it'll be interesting to see what the difference is in the approach even of filming the shows versus the movies as we're like looking at them. You know what I mean? Because on the one hand, we're
and budgets.
Right. Exactly. Because I'm thinking, gosh, well, I don't want to see Black Widow. I don't want to see like the next Thor movie, right? Like, come through on a streaming service for the first time. But at the same time, you know, that was always going to be the case with WandaVision. And I'm simultaneously hoping that WandaVision quality-wise is on par with a theatrical release. So maybe there's a paradox within my own view there.
But that's what's going to be fascinating is like, do they make WandaVision like smaller scale on purpose because it's a show and they have a slightly less budget, right? So like they can't include... So what happens when the show demands a massive battle scene that takes $10 million in CGI, right? I want them to have that budget.
Right.
And the movies as of now have that budget because of what they make. And if they're not making it, I don't know. I want Thor Love and Thunder to have his unlimited amount of budget so that they can do everything to the highest degree possible. That's what I want.
Right.
And I'm nervous that if it gets forced to streaming service and the budgets go down, that they avoid certain things. They even make the movie in a different way because of that. And I'm hoping that's not the case. Hopefully they can tell stories like WandaVision and not have a big budget.
Right. Well, and I think it has to be said that even in a worst case scenario, even if we move to where there's less of an emphasis on theatrical release, or even just as we're talking about the Disney Plus shows, if those gain a lot of traction and become more primary storytelling vehicles rather than secondary, you know, I know you're not a Game of Thrones guy, but the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones, whenever it was obviously massive, even you can quibble with the story for sure and with the writing, but the effects were pretty top-notch. So I feel like there is a way to do small screen stuff that feels like big screen quality. I don't want that to be what happens, but I am at least comforted that there is a precedent there. There is a precedent there, and I do think that that's something that, like, if we have to come down to that, you know, we could be all right. But I would like to see us not land there, I guess.
Okay, and then the last closure to that is that reportedly these shows, Like, reportedly, Hawkeye itself is going to have a budget of $200
million. Wow.
And
wow.
Marvel series Falcon and the Winter Soldier, WandaVision, and Hawkeye may cost as much as $25 million per episode, totaling $500 million. So
man,
we don't even know how they're going to spend that kind of money, because that seems absurd for a show like Hawkeye. But to kind of ease my own concerns, it seems like Disney is saying unlimited budget, even if it's a show.
Right.
Which, like I said, eases some of my concerns. So let's just see. Okay, so all this could change. But my point is, as of now, let's move on. Black Widow is the first movie that's coming out on May 7, 2021. It's directed by Kate Shortland. What do you want to talk about?
Gosh. I can just start here and then let you take over. The last movie I saw in theaters, I guess the only movie I've really seen in theaters in months and months, was Tenet. And in that movie, I saw several trailers, and I don't know what iteration. I think we even mentioned this on one of our summer podcasts, but that's the last trailer I saw of Black Widow, and it got me super hyped for it. And so I've kind of been riding that since. I haven't seen a ton of new stuff since then. I feel like most of what I've seen circulating is kind of stuff I'd already seen. But I'm still excited for Black Widow. I would say in terms of like the analog to last week, I feel about Black Widow about how I feel about Falcon and Winter Soldier.
100%. That's where I'm at. Like, I'm excited for it. I can't wait to see what happens. I think Scarlett Johansson and Florence Pugh are awesome. I think it'll be fun to have David Harbour in it. I'm excited about other casting things. None of the trailers have really got me going. I'm hoping to be pleasantly surprised on that front. I know it's her kind of dealing with her past, and I am interested to see that. It's an interesting story to tell because we already know she's dead. And so anytime you're going back and you can't use death as the threat, right? Because we know she's not going to die there. You have to find other ways to mess with our emotions. So I think they can do that. Rogue One did that. I'm excited for that. But in general, I'm about exactly where you're at. Like, I see the trailers, and I see the movie and the cast and everything, and I'm about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier level of excitement, which is like, I'm still excited. It looks like a pretty standard Marvel movie. I don't mean that in any negative sense at all. Remember how we talked about Doctor Strange on that episode?
Right.
I'm like, this feels like that's what it looks like, and I hope I'm pleasantly surprised, but even if I'm not, it'll still be a fun thing to watch. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, so two things that I've thought recently. One, because you mentioned Florence Pugh, I did see, and now I'm blanking on this, is it Hawkeye that she is supposed to reprise her role in? There is some other, she's been confirmed in some other Marvel production that she'll be sticking around in some capacity, which is exciting and kind of makes sense. I mean, they wouldn't introduce someone like Florence Pugh and just have her be like a one-off character. But that makes me happy because obviously we've lost Natasha. So I think another character in that vein could be cool. Though, as always, I don't want them reusing molds too much.
Right. It does seem like they're kind of passing the baton that maybe she could stay in longer, you know, in other facets. But then you always have that like awkward spot of like, where were you during all this?
Totally.
You know, they're going to have to answer that.
So my other question there is, I was recently rewatching Age of Ultron, of course, always, and I was noticing even more so, and I think we even talked about this on the episode, but it's just
most rewatchable question mark?
I mean, we've talked about that, but
we throw it on a lot. Okay, keep going. Sorry. Keep going. Go.
I was looking at that scene, you know, where Wanda's getting in all of their heads and they're seeing their own respective visions, and I was noticing really how much everyone's vision, you know, starting with Tony's at the beginning of the movie, but then Thor and Cap's, all come true in one sense or the other.
Right.
You know, right like Ragnarok comes, like Cap ends up, he does end up going back home to Peggy, and, you know, Tony kind of winds up experiencing this cataclysmic thing because of Thanos. So Natasha is the only character who, like, you know, that
didn't
scene
have to go
sparks
back to that.
Exactly. Like that scene sparks that conversation with Bruce, but that's the only thing we get. And so it made me really hope that...
Interesting. You know,
yeah, you know, because like that scene wound up giving us such insight. Like, you know, not saying that that determined the direction that those characters took, but I think it's kind of a cool window into like what their like hopes and or fears were and where that led in their own stories. And I would love to see something like that happen with Natasha because, you know, I do feel like we've gotten stuff in the trailers to show that this is going to be a very like Red Room focused thing.
Right.
And I would love to see whatever, because, you know, this movie would take place post Age of Ultron, right? So it would make sense that...
Post-Civil War.
Right. Post-Civil War. But I just mean like, you know, this would, in the same way that like the visions that those characters had that kind of came to pass, I think that this could be a vision that sort of in some ways comes to pass. I don't know what that would totally look like, but I think that that would be another cool connection that I would not put it past Marvel to make.
I love that. To the extent it deals with some of that stuff, I think it'll be really fun, for sure.
Right.
When I was writing down these notes for going over all these movies, I was kind of struck by, and again, this is a little negative, again, so just, you know, easy. I was struck by the fact that the first three movies that Marvel is having to kick off this next era are not like the three that I would say I'm overly pumped for or that seem like would be the next building block step with Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings and the Eternals. That's not like the obvious, it's not like a Spider-Man 3 kicking it off or right, Doctor or Strange Thor. 2, right? Or yeah, it's like, so that'll be interesting. I was also struck by, I was Googling these directors and a lot of these early directors, when I mean early, I mean these of this new phase, these directors, Kate Shortland, Destin Daniel Cretton, and Chloe Zhao, mm-hmm. I have never heard of. And I was Googling their like IMDb, and they have not made a ton of notable blockbusters. So it'll be really interesting to see how this goes with these people. I'm not saying they're going to be bad. I'm just saying this is all new. New characters, new vibe, new directors.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because if you look at early phase one, which I think, you know, is kind of the last time that Marvel was in this position of really building something new, they went the total opposite direction, right? Like they got some pretty heavy hitter, like Joe Johnson, Kenneth Branagh, Jon Favreau. Now, you know, granted, they've kind of been moving steadily in that direction. I mean, you know, John Watts was not an unknown by any means, but definitely not known for blockbusters. And you could say the same for Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck with Captain Marvel. And so I definitely think I have gotten the sense that in recent years, Kevin Feige
has... But like Taika Waititi, Sam Raimi, those are like big names.
Right.
Like people
that's
know
true.
What you're talking about. But so see, it's been a mix. It's been a mix all along, I guess.
And Taika was still kind of a big swing, right? Because
yeah, true. At the time.
You know, at the time, he had done the stuff he had done, I would not see, especially translating well to a Thor movie.
You're right.
But I've actually thought, well, and I'll hold off on that, but remind me when we talk about Doctor Strange to talk about Sam Raimi, because I do think that that's going to create an interesting moment for Marvel Studios. But yeah, with this stuff, I think that Kevin Feige has found that bringing in more like indie style directors, one, keeps what could be a like by definition formulaic movie series fresh. I think it winds up working really well because on the one hand, you get stuff that feels really unique. Like I think the way that Homecoming and Far From Home do, like they feel like a movie made by the same guy with the same kind of sensibilities. At the same time, I think that people that don't necessarily have the prestige of like a Kenneth Branagh also are maybe going to be more amenable to kind of submit, maybe that's too strong of a word, but to Kevin Feige's vision. Like I was going to say,
in a lot of ways, the director of these movies would be an interesting role to take when you're coming from an indie movie. It's like, hey, now you have a massive budget, but you know, we want you to kind of tell this story and go this direction. I don't know. There'd just be a lot of interesting challenges with that from someone who's never been working in it before.
Right. And I think, and my understanding is that, you know, Marvel, we talked about this when we talked about...
Hey, you're making the biggest movie of the year.
Right. I mean, when we talked about Guardians even with Kyle, initially we talked about how kind of James Gunn was told, you know, you can kind of do whatever you want to do, but you do have to introduce Thanos. Like, he has to get a certain amount of screen time in this movie. And that's not a small thing to drop on a writer-director, right? I mean, because he already had his own villain to deal with, and so now it's like you also need to get this in to move us along in this mega story. And ultimately, like, I don't want to say that in this kind of anti-corporate Marvel way, because I'm glad that Kevin Feige started introducing Thanos there. Right. But, you know, it just does pose an interesting... I feel like it would take a certain kind of temperament and a certain kind of director to be able to handle that. And so I think that's why it makes sense to me that they would pull in some people that maybe aren't so set in their ways or have their own process, that they're kind of more willing to be collaborative like that with the studio.
I think that's fair. Well, that takes us to Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which is coming out on July 9, 2021. And I know nothing about this movie other than... the tie to the potential terrorist group in Iron Man 1, the Ten Rings.
Uh-huh. And sort of Iron Man 3.
That's all I know. So take it from there if you want.
Well, I don't know a ton about the movie either. And that's something, again, that I have really tried to not read too much on or, you know, traffic too much in the rumors. I know about Shang-Chi, again, kind of from certain comic reading. I talked about the Jonathan Hickman Avengers series earlier, and he features fairly prominently in that. I think it's a fun character that kind of goes back to Marvel's like 70s love affair with Kung Fu. I think it's a really interesting character to bring. Like, I would never have thought, like, you know what the MCU needs? Shang-Chi. Right.
That's kind of how I feel a little bit about The Eternals as well, which comes out November 5, 2021. So both next year. That's what I mean. That's a pretty big swing too.
Right. I think what's interesting about those two movies, you know, because you're talking about kind of how this first three, they're not the movies that you would necessarily expect to start off with. But in some ways, I think it's kind of similar to what initially Marvel is planning to do with the Disney Plus shows, like back whenever Falcon and Winter Soldier was going to be the first one before that filming got delayed and yada, 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 where they were going to start with Falcon Winter Soldier and then do WandaVision, which was going to be kind of the weird one. I think that in some ways, like, you know, Black Widow, it's a character everyone's super, super familiar with. It's a vibe everyone's pretty familiar with because it feels super Winter Soldier-y. And then Eternals looks like Guardians level different, you know.
That's in terms what I was gonna say. Eternals looks like the weirdest characters we've had introduced since Groot and Rocket,
right? Which have now been normalized. But you have to remember, as we said before, in 2014, coming off of Winter Soldier, right? Which is again kind of similar, you know, like Winter Soldier to Guardians and Black Widow to Eternals.
Well, let's just hope that Eternals hits as well as Guardians did.
Man, yeah, I've read, you know, Neil Gaiman and John Romita Jr. did a pretty prominent Eternals comic in the mid-2000s. You know, it's a Jack Kirby creation from back in the day, but I have a sense that they're going to pull kind of heavily from this last run. But again, that doesn't give me a ton to go on at all. You know, it's like, they're basically, like, in the Marvel lore, something equivalent to godlike beings, which we've kind of already covered in the MCU, you know, with Asgardians, sort of. And, you know, we know Ms. Marvel's coming in, which may or may not introduce Inhumans. And that's, you know, we're getting to this mode where it's like, you know, how many different types of like humanoid but not human beings are there in and around the earth.
Right. Right, that's true.
And so, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how they do it. I am excited about some of the casting, particularly Kumail Nanjiani. I don't know if you're a big fan of his, but I like his work a lot. The Big Sick is one of my favorite movies of the past few years. So I think, you know, it'll be fun to have him in this universe. And I think it looks weird, which I'm always excited about. And I would way rather Marvel go for a big swing and a miss than try to play it safe.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, hopefully they're just like such God figures that they're just out there and don't really tie into Captain America or something right on that level. But it, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy has shown us that this universe is massive and there's all kinds of creatures and beings out there. So it's not that much of a stretch to believe that these kinds of people are there for my brain. Right. I just will be really interested to see how invested can they make me in that and how tied in can that be.
Right. I mean, because I will say in the comics, not very, like, which I'm fine with. Like, they show up and they have interactions. Like in that Eternal series I was talking about, it takes place in the comics around the time Civil War is taking place or right in the aftermath. So they have some interactions with Iron Man, trying to get them to register and kind of some fun things like that. But ultimately, like, part of the point of those scenes is showing how, like, hopelessly outclassed Tony Stark is.
Well, and we kind of have one experience in the MCU with this already, a little bit with Ego, you know, self-identifying as like a celestial.
Oh, true. Yeah.
You know, something similar to that where, and for me, that didn't work as well.
Right.
So we have a little bit of that kind of vibe though, where he was like a god, he was a planet, you know? So it can work to some extent. I hope they do it a little bit better for me personally. But again, we'll just have to see.
So I think before we move on, that actually makes me think one of the things that it seems like Marvel's doing in the post-Endgame world is something that I feel like Marvel's been doing for a while on the comic side with their kind of big event books, in that they'll do these massive kind of Endgame equivalent comic book events and then follow them up with either new solo series or little mini series that sort of chronicle how these different corners of the Marvel universe are dealing with that, or just kind of what the next phase looks like for that character. And I kind of get the sense that that's where we're going, especially with the shows, you know, zooming in on like Falcon Winter Soldier and Wanda and Vision. But also, like, I would be really fine with an Eternals movie that is like in the same universe that never has to connect back into another Avengers movie.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I said that, I kind of hope that almost.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see.
I think I'm with you there.
Like, I'm not necessarily wanting a battle between one of the Eternals and, you know, said character, Rocket. That's not right. What I'm necessarily needing. But you know what
right.
I mean.
Right.
And then, dude, we have to get to this because now we're getting to the heavy hitters. Then on December 17, 2021, Spider-Man 3, directed by John Watts. And I just want to point this out, too.
Is that how that's like a year from now. That's crazy.
I know. I was just going to say, how insane is this? That if nothing shifts, just think about this list for a second. In order, this is what 2021 is going to look like. In order, WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, like basically back-to-back, right into Black Widow, then mm-hmm. Loki, same month as Black Widow, Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings during the summer, The Eternals in November, and then Spider-Man 3 in December.
That's insane.
So that's four movies and like multiple shows in the same year. It'll be a Marvel year like we've never had. Okay.
Which, you know, I feel like we've earned at this point.
Obviously, but Robbie and I are massive Spider-Man fans. We loved Far From Home and we loved Homecoming. We're both excited, as we've said many times on this podcast, for John Watts to kind of close out a Spider-Man trilogy, if you will. So before we beat this to death, because we have an entire calendar year, Robbie, let's just one more time say our big point. I was on Disney's website and it's like confirmed. One of our listeners said this to us, like Spider-Man 3, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which comes out March 25, 2022, and WandaVision are all tied in some way. So they are clearly setting up some kind of multiverse, some kind of reality. And we're both just fascinated to see how that works. We've said this 100 times on this podcast. I personally am nervous about a multiverse because I don't want any other realities to belittle the one I'm in. But we had another listener comment that, you know, like one of the things Spider-Verse did so well was you found out there's all these different Spider-Mans and all these different realities, but you still ultimately care about the main one you're seeing.
Right.
So there is still a way to make it like, yeah, there's all these realities, but this is the one we care about. I fully trust that they're going to do it in a way that I love, but we can't lie, Robbie. Every time we see these updates of Doc Ock's going to be in it, Electro's going to be in it, all the other Spider-Mans are going to be in it. All of the, it's like every time we read those, everyone else goes, that's amazing. And we go, we want Spider-Man's trilogy to be closed being about like ground level Spider-Man. This seems like we're going the exact opposite. Let's get every character ever, make it as galactic and massive and multiverse as possible. Again, I think there's a way to do it. I've said this before in this podcast, so I'm not going to go into it like crazy. I don't want this to be a 2-hour long episode, just me ranting about that. Like if they kind of flash through it and he like, you know, it's some kind of vision or like he interacts with another reality for a teeny bit and then it kind of closes that story or, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, that would be kind of fun and it'd be kind of like a fun like shout out to the obvious Spider-Man lore that's been going on for years now. Like,
right.
I'm fine with embracing the fact that Spider-Man has been different because of the rights and all this stuff. But I am hesitant that we belittle Spider-Man's trilogy and how I want Spider-Man to grow up in this movie, right? Like Far From Home was about him growing. I want this version to be an older Spider-Man that's a little more mature, that's a little more ready to like take on the mantle, to be a little bit more like my PlayStation 4 version of Spider-Man, just a pinch.
Right.
And I'm nervous that you can't fully do that if we're bringing in every other character that's ever been created into the movie.
No, I 100% agree. And
I ultimately trust John Watts and Kevin Feige. I ultimately do.
I do trust them. I will say, I feel like I'm not normally the pessimist here, but just to get this out, my fear would be, and I'm absolutely looking for Marvel to prove me wrong. My fear is that something went on behind the scenes last summer when Marvel and Sony had that break that was then mended, where Marvel basically agreed
to compromise
to kind of loop in and therefore sort of inject some more relevance into
Mobius
Sony's
and Venom
other
and-
right by trying to kind of link this stuff. And I absolutely see why Sony, you know, why it would be in their best interest to do that, because they have these other properties, and why just, you know, I mean, obviously they're making money, but I'm sure they felt like it was a lost opportunity to have Marvel being able to use this to further their own story and not be able to use it on the Sony side. So I totally get why it would happen from a corporate level, but I just hope that it's a creative decision that Feige and John Watts are actually comfortable with and not one that they felt like they were kind of strong-armed into.
Right. And like the teaser scene at the end of Far From Home is that Spider-Man's identity is revealed. That got me so excited. Like, right. Let's play with like still the ground level. Oh no, we don't want people to find out I'm actually Spider-Man. That's the kind of story I'm pumped for.
Right.
So again, you know what I'm saying? If it gets bigger than that, they can do it in a way that I'll like it. I'm not trying to, this is not a freezing cold take that you can come back to and be like, oh Kyle, you said you were going to like it. I'm just saying I'm hesitant on that front. But in general, Spider-Man 3 and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness on March 25, 2022, and then Thor, Love and Thunder, May 6, 2022, those are the three I'm literally the most pumped about. So like, it seems like from December to May of the next year, I'm going to have like Marvel heaven. So,
man.
So that's going to be a stretch like I haven't felt in a long time.
It is funny the difference between that first three and the next three.
That's what I mean. It's like you go from Black Widow, Shang-Chi, and Eternals, like big swings, smaller characters directed by people that haven't done blockbuster films, to John Watts doing Spider-Man, Sam Raimi doing Doctor Strange, and Taika Waititi doing Thor. We know those characters already. What a massive swing. Those are probably like three of the biggest characters we have left in the MCU. And
right.
How meta and just crazy that, again, they're bringing in Sam Raimi to do Doctor Strange, not the Spider-Man movie.
Right.
So, and he's
but
got
the
that
Doctor
past.
Strange is going to be connected to the Spider-Man movie.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So they're obviously setting this up. They're going to have to do some kind of trick to make it not the obvious story.
Right. So what I was going to say earlier.
Oh,
about,
and Wanda's going to be in Doctor Strange, by the way.
Right.
As
and
like
Loki.
A main character. Yeah. So like, which I love, but we'll just see.
Right.
By
right.
the way, that's a movie that you could go big with. If we're as sensitive
oh, yeah.
about Spider-Man, right? We're sensitive about Spider-Man. And doing the multiverse thing, we're not sensitive about Doctor Strange doing it, right? Because
no,
we've already seen all the reality
yeah.
things with him.
I want Doctor Strange to be as weird and freaky as it can possibly be. Like, I mean, like, I love it because, you know, Scott Derrickson.
His name is literally Strange, okay?
Right. Scott Derrickson is a horror guy. We talked about that. I feel like that really didn't come across a ton. There were a few scenes where you can feel it.
Well,
in
Sam
the first
Raimi
Doctor
is
Strange.
Too, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, Sam Raimi kind of cut his teeth on the Evil Dead movies, which are sort of cult classics. And you saw bits of that, like, especially in Spider-Man 2, some of those Doc Ock scenes. You kind of saw him using those sensibilities. I think, and we talked about this back when it was first announced, I think it's a great call. I think what's really interesting about it, though, is what I was saying earlier, where like Sam Raimi is in some ways like kind of the king of the superhero blockbuster. I mean, now the Russo brothers have obviously probably taken that mantle to some degree, but like he really ushered in the era of superhero movies with those Spider-Man films. And so like he's coming in with a lot of clout, and it makes me wonder what those conversations look like then whenever he and Feige have like a creative disagreement, you know, like,
but I love that they're giving him the reins to Doctor Strange and not Spider-Man, that
oh,
John
absolutely.
Watts is still usurping his role there. I love that. Let
absolutely.
Him finish what he started.
Yeah. And I do want to second what you said, where like it's not that I have any issue with them going big. I think with that Spider-Man movie, gosh, Kyle, we've just been burned so many times now with them getting ahead of themselves with like, they're like, oh, we have all the Spider-Man lore, because I think you could argue this, but I think either Spider-Man or Batman has kind of the richest comic legacy of any
oh,
single
sure.
character. And so there's so much, and
it's like they get so excited they don't have to do it themselves.
Yes, exactly. And they just throw it all in. And I'm like, I think that the MCU Spider-Man movies have been so great in their restraint that I would just hate to see any of that go out the window. And
I love your thought on that.
You know,
you can
like,
clearly tell Robbie has thought about Spider-Man, which is the least surprising thing I've heard in a while, but I love it.
But I'm like you. I trust them, and I have certainly high hopes. And I would say it's a close tie between the next Spider-Man and Thor: Love and Thunder for what I'm most excited about.
Right. Okay. Because this is kind of just an overview informing people of what's coming up, I need to keep us moving. Otherwise, this is going to be 10 hours long. So obviously, these movies aren't coming out for years, so we have time to get into them fully of what we expect. But
right.
Spider-Man, December 17, 2021. That's going to be a crazy 2021. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, March 25, 2022, kicks off 2022, followed up really quickly May 6, 2022 with Thor: Love and Thunder. And the only thing I want to add here is Christian Bale being in this is a game changer for me. I think he's one of the best actors we have. I love him in his mm-hmm. roles, and I cannot wait to see him in this movie. I would also like to add that one of my theories with these movies is I want a villain to be introduced and not killed in the same movie. Can we start forming a Sinister Six of some form? One of these movies would be kind of fun, whether it's Doc Ock, whether it is Christian Bale in Thor: Love and Thunder. But in general, I love that Christian Bale's in this. I think it's going to mean that he wants to be a part of it and that he's going to bring an A-level performance. Mm-hmm. And this is already to a movie that I'm super pumped about. As you guys already know, Natalie Portman's going to be back in this movie, and they're playing with some story of Natalie Portman becoming a female Thor of some form, however they're going to do that.
Right.
And that Taika has said, this script is even better, but even more zany than Ragnarok. And Chris Hemsworth said when he read it, it was just like the craziest thing.
Man.
So take that for what it's worth.
I love that. I love that.
And then Robbie and I have theories about where it's going to go, and we'll get into that later. We both, I think, hope that it shows Thor like kind of getting back into shape, because we've already seen the Thor. Thor's had such a beautiful story as far as he's been torn down. He's lost his honor, if you will. He's had to like build his way back up. He's lost everything. And then that was perfectly shown in Endgame as Fat Thor and Depressed Thor. By the way, I say Fat Thor, and I'm referring to the character, but that almost belittles, I think, the emotional core that that character has. I don't mean to make it a joke. Like, I loved the depiction of his alcoholism and depression, so I'm not trying to joke about that. But he's already been through all that. So I think I speak for both of us when I say we kind of hope that Thor Love and Thunder deals with a different version of Thor, like a Thor that's grown, right? Like, we've already seen that storyline of he's been beaten down and lost everything. So it'd be fun to see just a different vibe.
Well, and that's why, and this is all I'll say because I could talk about it for way too long, but that's why I'm really excited about the villain choice here. And I'm very intrigued because, you know, this was one of my favorite stories that I've read probably from any comics I've read in the past few years, was this Jason Aaron run with Gore the God Butcher, who is the villain that Christian Bale will be portraying. However, yeah, I mean, like that story kind of kicked off the unworthy Thor that we've sort of already seen adapted between Ragnarok, Infinity War, and Endgame, right? So to me, it just makes it even more exciting.
And because kind of even Thor 1. I mean, it starts with him being cast out and not being able to hold his hammer. So
I mean, it's a character that I love. I love that we're getting Natalie Portman again. It's like hints of these stories that I've read and I'm a big fan of. But to go all the way back to the beginning of this conversation, I love that like they've already kind of done the expected thing. Like they've already adapted some of the stuff that I remember from the story. So that makes me think that like they are going to do something totally out there and kind of throw it all in a blender, which I love.
And not the obvious.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And hopefully we get a non-phoned-in performance from Natalie Portman. So.
Oh, gosh. I've actually, every time we've had folks listen back, I've got some flack from the way we talked about Natalie Portman's performance there. So maybe we were overly harsh. I don't know that we were.
I'm genuinely excited to have her in this movie, so don't get me wrong.
Oh, no, for sure. She's fantastic. I was actually watching V for Vendetta on November 5th, obviously.
Contractually obligated.
Right. Yeah. She's so good in that movie. Yeah, I mean, she's great in this stuff whenever she's given really good material to work with. So I'm really excited about that.
What are you saying about Thor Dark World, bro? You know we have to get that in. Oh, come on. Okay, stop. Focus. then Black Panther 2 on July 8, 2022. And it's hard for me to say super excited about this because of the circumstances. It's just a weird... Gosh. This movie was unfortunately thrust into a very weird realm at no fault of its own. Yeah. Obviously, we're going to have to talk about this one in depth like crazy later. Like, there's so many things. Like, Robbie and I have talked on the phone. Like, what do we do with this? Like, if you were him, what would you do? Do you recast Black Panther? They've already said they're not going to do that. Do you
Which
write
I think
in
was
the
right
story
call for sure.
That he died off camera? Like, meaning in the story, I'm saying, like, do you just say, oh, he died on a mission? That feels like it belittles what happened to him. They obviously were not prepping on him being dead in real life. This was meant to be a character that was going to go for, I think, for a long time. Not only his own trilogy, but be a part of like the Avengers, I think.
Yeah.
And a leader.
I mean, this was one of the sequels that I was most excited about. Because, I mean, we've talked about how much we love Chadwick's T'Challa. And it's still, I mean, like the tragedy of this, of a year that's been filled with tragedies. But
it's genuinely awful still.
Yeah. I mean, every time I'm reminded about it, it just kills me. I'm really, really grateful that Marvel is not trying to recast that character. I think that would be really tough for me and for a lot of people to kind of deal with.
You can't pull a Terrence Howard, Donald Cheadle on this. It's not the same thing.
No. And you know, I am also excited that out of this, you know, they're going to try to kind of dig into some of the other characters because I love that we have such a great cast there. I mean, like, we talked about how great Lupita was and Letitia Wright and Winston Duke. I mean, you've got some
and
really fun
stuff
to work with.
And it says they're going to explore the rich history of Wakanda on here on their release. Right. So there is things they can do. How they handle actual T'Challa being gone will be fascinating to see
yeah,
in this actual
absolutely.
Story, I mean. But again, that's an incredible 2022. Doctor Strange, Thor, and Black Panther 2 in the same year.
Yeah.
I mean, that'll be so much fun. That kind of ends the, like, obvious, we know dates, like, slam dunk time. After that, Blade is coming out in there somewhere after that. I don't know a ton
right.
about it, though. And then Captain Marvel 2 is announced on November 11, 2022. But that
right.
movie has had a director change and has been pushed back. So I would not be surprised to see if that got pushed back again with all this. So we don't know that. But what do you know about Blade in that year? And then what do we know about Captain Marvel 2?
Man, I feel like I know very little about either of those, except, I mean, Blade especially, although Mahershala is one of my favorite actors, so I'm really excited about just getting
I don't
him.
Know that we're supposed to know a lot about Blade yet.
Yeah, so. I don't think so either. Captain Marvel, all I know is that the character that we've talked about appearing in WandaVision, who is, you know, like grown-up Lieutenant Trouble, Monica Rambeau,
right.
she is going to be in Captain Marvel 2. So
and
that has been confirmed.
They have confirmed that Miss Marvel will be in that movie.
Oh, I didn't even see that. That's fun.
Yeah, which I love because
yeah.
we talked about how that was her favorite Avenger and that's why she became Miss Marvel. And we said, oh, they didn't have time to really meet each other. Well, she's going to be in this movie. So through the show buildup, it will be kind of fun to see her in this facet. And I would love to see them interacting.
Because remind me, Miss Marvel, the show will come out prior to this movie, correct?
Yes. It says Miss Marvel, the show is coming out late 2021. This movie is the end of 2022. So,
okay, interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. And it's directed by Nia DaCosta, so the director has changed, which for me, no offense to their people, but I'm actually kind of excited because, as everyone knows in this podcast, I did not like Captain Marvel, and I don't like her as a character. But I'm excited to see if, A, Brie Larson having more time as Captain Marvel has helped her grow into her comfort of the role,
mm-hmm.
and the vibe maybe can change a little bit that way, and then B, does a director change help that vibe improve to where I like her more?
Yeah.
And honestly, the fact that now Tony and Cap are gone leaves more room for me to feel stronger for somebody else, if that makes sense.
Right. Right. It is funny. You know, we've talked this to death, but it's funny how much I think, you know, I still think Endgame was like, I have obviously very little complaints, but I do think, like, now I'm so excited to see where Captain Marvel goes. I genuinely am. And I'm excited to see where a lot of characters go. But that's not where I was with Endgame. You know, like, with Endgame, I was really excited to see what happened with really, like, Tony and Thor and Steve and Natasha and Clint, right? Like, and Bruce. Like, those are the, like, I wanted to see where those characters went. And it just makes me think again, like, how much I do kind of wish that the Captain Marvel movie even had maybe been pushed a bit off, but we won't get into that now. But I will say,
we have to bring it up every single time we talk.
I know,
otherwise,
I know.
Just well, not we're not friends if we don't bring it up every
right.
time.
But I say, and I think that you maybe agree with that. Like I say that just because I am now. I feel like I can be excited for the character because I feel like they're not juggling for time and for competing storylines. Like I feel like you're right. There's a lot of
right.
room for that to now
right.
grow.
That's
Which is
what
great.
I think. Yeah. And then 2023 is going to bring us Ant-Man and the Wasp, however you want to call it, 2 or 3, Ant-Man 3, Ant-Man and the Wasp 2, Quantumania,
right,
which is kind of funny,
yeah.
still playing on
yeah.
the quantum realm. Peyton Reed returns to direct it, and we don't have a specific date yet, but I think it's sometime in 2023.
And what we do know is that Jonathan Majors has been cast as Kang the Conqueror, who is a
yeah.
classic Marvel villain that is kind of perfect for the content of the Ant-Man movies so far, especially post-Endgame. So it's a really fun character. He's like a time-traveling guy from the future, almost like a Terminator kind of a thing. I love Jonathan Majors. He was in a movie called The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which was fantastic. He's also in Lovecraft Country, which has been on HBO this past year. I think it wrapped up maybe a month or two ago. So he can definitely do the sci-fi thing, but really, really great actor. And as soon as that casting decision was announced, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. And it honestly, you know, Ant-Man has been a series that I think both of us have been like pretty good with, right? But not necessarily
right
amped on. And
I think they do a good job for what the character is. Like,
right.
I'm not looking for a ton more from my Ant-Man movies.
But knowing now that this is the direction they're going actually makes me genuinely excited for this in a way that I really wasn't for the first or second Ant-Man film. So this is great news as far as I'm concerned.
Then, you know me, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, 2023, sometime in there, yes. James Gunn will be my scene. I think it's reported slash maybe confirmed that Thor is going to be in that movie, which just makes me so happy. I just love that all these characters are colliding. We know nothing else about it. This movie's probably a little later than they originally wanted, but because they fired James Gunn the first time, I think it got pushed back because he went on to go do the Suicide Squad stuff. So they had to get him back, so it's later than they wanted. But that will be that year too. And then the only other movie they've announced fully to this point is a Fantastic Four movie.
Yes, no date, Kyle.
No date, and it'll be beyond that probably. It'll probably be after Guardians 3. It is directed by John Watts, who again did the Spider-Man trilogy, which Robbie loves. I am totally not sold on needing Fantastic Four because the other movie is the worst movie I've ever seen in the history of film. So that's tough, but Robbie is all in on Fantastic Four.
So okay, couple things. One, will you just remind me and the listeners where the Guardians holiday special falls into the timeline versus Guardians 3? Because I was trying to remember that.
Yeah, well, somewhere in there. Some of this timeline stuff, again, Robbie, is getting hairy and it's going to have to change. This site is showing that Guardians 3 is coming out in 2023 and Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special is Christmas 2022. So special first before movie.
Okay, that's what I thought. So that'll be, because James Gunn has stressed that the holiday special is going to be like canon in the MCU. So it'll be kind of interesting to see if that serves as sort of a, like we've talked a lot about how Endgame left the Guardians in a really different spot than I feel like James Gunn might have known at the time that he drafted the Guardians 3 script.
Right.
Because I feel like that script, like I've heard rumors of that having been around for a while. And it almost makes me wonder if this holiday special is going to kind of do some cleanup work to get those characters from where they were at the end of Endgame to where he kind of needs them to be for the start of like the final installment in his trilogy, which I'm totally fine with if that's the case. That's total conjecture, obviously.
Right. That is fascinating. Before he had departed, he had, I guess, reportedly, you know, referred to it as like, this is the end of the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy. So 100%, I wonder if the Endgame thing is going to change his mind on that. 100%.
Right.
Okay. And then just give me one little blurb about Fantastic Four, but we got to keep this moving, please.
I know. This is really all I can say is like, I've spent this year, I think I've talked about this before, reading back through a lot of the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Fantastic Four stuff. Now, I've read the classic Spider-Man stuff, and I don't think it's to that level. It is really fun, and what makes me really excited about John Watts being on board is we talked about how as much as it's kind of modernized, I feel like Homecoming really got to the DNA of the Stan Lee, Steve Ditko Spider-Man character, like where it really hits home, like he's a teenager, they get to kind of the responsibility that he feels, but sort of that mixed with the weight that comes with that when you're only 15 or 16. I just think that it's like, beyond all that, they kept the fun-loving, somewhat lighthearted nature rather than like, right, like the first Spider-Man Sam Raimi film gets a lot darker. Even not that that's a dark movie, but right, like compared to Homecoming and the Andrew Garfield films definitely are a lot darker. So the reason I'm excited is I feel like John Watts has the ability to kind of take the sort of winsome nature of those early 60s Stan Lee years and channel them in a way that feels very timely and relevant. And I would love to see him bring that energy to the Fantastic Four, because I don't want a cool, edgy, broody Fantastic Four. Like, that's, they're trying to, especially like in the last, like Josh Trank version, trying to make it very modernized. And I just think like, look, like I want, and maybe I'm a sucker for this, you know, cause I'm obviously like the Cap guy. I like the like kind of hard on your sleeve, like fun loving, like classic comics, lighthearted thing. And I think John Watts does that so well that there really isn't someone else that I would want to be at the helm of this. Like, if they're gonna announce a Fantastic Four movie, I'm like you, like I haven't been like aching for it, but it is, I mean, it is at the core of the Marvel universe. Like I'm sure you know, it's like Marvel first family.
This is getting,
I know. I'm just saying, I think that you have to, like, it's been butchered every time they've tried. I think Kevin Feige loves the Fantastic Four characters from what I've read. And I think that, like, it's such a, like, I would love to see them done really well, finally.
There's a fan movement to have John Krasinski play Reed Richards, Jim Halpert.
And Emily Blunt play Sue Storm, right?
How funny would that be?
I mean, I would frankly be fine with it.
Yeah, it'd probably be great. Edge of Tomorrow is so good with Emily Blunt. Oh my gosh. There's a second Edge of Tomorrow coming. I know. Okay. So in summary, to end this, to wrap this all up, here is the entire list of their announcement. And then we have to let people go. Here we go.
Okay.
WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Widow, Loki, Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings, The Eternals, Spider-Man 3, What If, Hawkeye, Miss Marvel, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Thor Love and Thunder, She-Hulk, Black Panther 2, Captain Marvel 2, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Blade, Fantastic Four, Moon Knight, Secret Invasion, Ironheart, Armor Wars, the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, and I Am Groot. That was their announcement.
Insane.
And that's why Disney's stock went up 13% in one day.
Jeez.
So that's a lot to look forward to. Not to mention, by the way, there's like Deadpool 3 or maybe even X-Men movies that people are thinking could potentially tie in at some point. We haven't talked about it yet because that's a whole new thing. But there's just like already all of that plus some. So
gosh,
that's just a lot. I'm excited for a lot of it. It's going to be fun. I hope that they don't end up overextending themselves, if that makes sense, to the point where it's overkill, but that's not how I'm feeling right now. So I'm just ready for some new stuff.
I mean, look, we have been asking for new content for coming up on 2 years, and we are getting it. So, gosh, I mean, wish has been granted. When it rains, it pours. I could not be more excited for a ton of this stuff. I think we are going to have our hands full covering all of it, but we're really looking forward to diving into all of it alongside you guys. Like we said at the beginning, we're on all the social media at the FFW Podcast. We've loved having conversations about you guys, hearing about what shows you're excited about. So hit us up, let us know your thoughts on this episode, on last episode, just your general thoughts and expectations for this next phase ahead. And we will be sure to get back to you. And we will also be back to you with new episodes coming very soon. As we've said, we're going to kick it off with Spider-Man Far From Home to start our Friends From Work Phase 4. Then we will be moving into our WandaVision coverage.
And as always, thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time on Friends From Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.